Blog Talk Radio.
Well, you may throw your rock, hide your hand, working in the dark against your fellow man. But as sure as God made black and white, what's done in the dark will be brought to the light. You can run on for a long time, run on for a long time, run on for a long time. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Sooner or later, gotta cut you down. Go tell that long-tongued liar, go and tell that midnight rider, tell the rambler, the gambler, the backbiter, tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down. Tell him that God's gonna cut you down.
My mic can't hear me. That's what I bet you. My mic is not working. Radio. No one can hear me, right?
Terry, we can hear
Terry,
you very,
hear
very
you
quietly.
Very quietly.
Red, are you there?
Janet, can you hear me now?
Just barely.
Well, I may have to go to my handset. No one can hear me, right?
Right.
Right. I can hear you very, very quietly. Red, are you there?
Can you hear me now? Janet, can you hear me now?
Just barely.
Well, I may have to go to my handset. No one can hear me, right?
Right. Right. Quietly.
Is anyone there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Well, good. So are we live? Is Red on?
Red should be on. Are you there, Red?
I'm thinking that the problem is not with me. It's on maybe Blog Talk.
I think it is, too. I've got all four mics open.
All four? Is that with Elo as well?
I think so.
Well, Elo, can you hear us? And I've got the... I'm going to take the mic off so that I can hear the speaker. And I am hearing the speaker on the computer, so that means the show is broadcasting. But I'm interested to find out why none of the other mics are able to open up now.
I don't know. Is your Skype still on? Are you still on Skype, or should I turn it off?
I muted it.
Okay.
And I'll have to
Red?
Check and see if it's still on there. I'm going to drop Skype off entirely.
Okay. Red, are you there?
Well, we
Elo,
got,
are you there?
At least we got some feedback coming from our chat room indicating that they're hearing something. Well, hello, Chuck Kolb and Jan from Montana and all of the rest of our guests. I assume that you are hearing me. You might just give me a little heads up in the chat room to say, yes, we are hearing you at this point, because I'm not sure what's going on here tonight. We had a live mic with Red Beckman and also with Elo Jones, and I don't know if they can hear me. If you can hear me, we are not hearing you, so you might want to hang up and call back in so that we can get this show underway. And just want to thank everybody for your patience tonight. If this keeps up, Mama Cooks, I might ask you to sing us a song.
How about if we just do? What? How about if we just play a song and give a couple of minutes for everybody to dial out and call back in?
I got a better idea. I'm going to put you
All
on
right.
the spot.
What?
I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you to say a prayer, because I think that'll maybe straighten everything out.
Okay, we'll do. Father, we just come to you tonight, and we thank you for this amazing medium. And yet, we know that the enemy is the prince of the air, and we know that he wants to interfere with all the information that we want to get to people, and we just ask you to restrain him and to hold him back and to clear up all the problems that are going on here. We know country and there are so
And now, Mama Cooks, I am not hearing you, so I'm going to finish your prayer, if you haven't already, because I'm not hearing you anymore. Father God, we just want to lift you up, and we're so thankful that you're there, and even in the tough times and times like this in our country, that we can turn to you and ask that that you literally crush our enemies, and especially Satan. And we know that he is working against us and working against you, and it is his will to circumvent you and to actually replace you. And we just lift you up as the only true God, and we especially thankful for your Son. And we know that you will watch over us tonight and to go before us in everything that we say and do. And it's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen. Well, I'm hoping that somebody will interact with me here just so I know that I'm live. I see that Charles is saying, say, what did you say? In chat, giving me a hard time. At least I know you're there and hearing me. So that's good news. Elo,
this is
Red
Beckman. I'm on. Can you hear me?
I hear you now, Red. Thank the Lord. See, I knew a prayer would get it done.
Yeah, I dialed about four times before I finally got through.
Well, we're glad you made it through, Red. And apparently Elo's having the same trouble. I had trouble, too. I had to drop off of my Skype and call in on my phone, and we're getting lots of amens in the chat room now. That it's really funny because I told Janet to say a prayer for us, and next thing I know, she got cut off, so I finished it. And I knew a prayer would help straighten things out. We need a little divine intervention here tonight. Elo, are you on with us now? Well, I got a note that said Elo is on, but Elo, if you can hear me, I am not hearing you. So just keep trying. We'll be here when you finally get through. Red, you're still with us, right?
I am with you.
Well, now, while we're waiting for Elo to come on, and by the way, later on, Martin Babbitts is supposed to be calling in and speaking with us, hopefully getting a little dialogue going there with he and Elo. And I did extend an invitation to Wilton Strickland, but I haven't heard back from him yet. So if he calls in, the more the merrier. We'll just turn it into a party. While we're waiting, Red, maybe you should share some of your thoughts after our call last week. I know that you had some thoughts about that and had some ideas on things we need to talk about tonight. And maybe you can just start that conversation out while we're waiting for Elo to get live with us.
I would be more than happy to do that because I have spent a great deal of time since last week's program thinking about this program tonight. There is so much information that there's no way we could get it out in a matter of just a couple of hours. And last week's program was it was a godsend as far as I was concerned. We have had kind of a series of some programs that really weren't as needed as what we had last Thursday night. And of course, Elo is one of the great guests that we can, the greatest guest that we can have. Because she is so articulate in explaining the power of the jury. Now, what I would like to start out with tonight is the fact that we have to go back, we need to go back for the authority, the higher authority that we need. We don't want judges and politicians and all kinds of people telling us about our power. We need to go back to the book of Genesis and read the commission that God gave to Adam and Eve. And he told them, he said, I want you to subdue and take dominion of the planet. And there is... our commission as much as it was Adam and Eve's commission. That commission rests on every person's shoulders. We have that responsibility to shoulder the harness and do everything we can to subdue and take dominion. We have this word sovereignty that is, it was pretty much unheard of up until the last two or three or four years. But sovereignty was not a word that was used a great deal. Now we have a situation where we have national organization out there that is trying to work with state legislators so that the states, and the states are considering this, and some states have already gone this direction to express their sovereignty over the federal government, because the states were here before the federal government. And so the states theoretically are supposed to have sovereignty over the federal government, because the federal government was created by the states and by the people. And so when we go back to the original commission that was given to Adam and Eve, and recognize the fact that it also is the commission that you and I are under. And so then we come into this this time of American history, world history, where people are talking about sovereignty. And of course, sovereignty and dominion are kissing cousins, you might say. They're very closely related to each other. And of course, most of the audience to this program have heard me talk about the pecking order, the order of authority. Every society, whether it be cows or chickens or whatever it is, every society, for the most part, will always have a pecking order, and we human beings are no different. And our Heavenly Father, of course, is to be at the top of the pecking order, because He is the Creator. He is the one who gives us life, and He's the one that we are to be serving. And of course, we the people, Adam and Eve, came next. God didn't come down and go through 5 days of creation and create the green grass and the trees and the zebras and the elephants and then create Adam. He didn't do it that way. He didn't create a government. He created the animals and all, and then He created man, and man created government. The animals did not create government, and it was mankind who created governments. And mankind, for the most part, throughout the history of man on this planet, they've done a very poor job of creating governments that maintain their proper position as servants and tools that the people can use to fulfill the commission that God gave us. And so here we are at a time in our American history where we're talking about sovereignty. And I like to believe that back there in 1215 A.D., when the barons wrote Magna Carta, the Great Charter of England, I think there was probably a great deal of conversation amongst the people and amongst the barons. They discussed sovereignty a great deal, because King George or King John, he had this grip, iron clasp on the people and on the land. He claimed that all of the land belonged to the king, and that you could just be a serf on the land. And the barons came along and said, no, that's going to change. We're going to have a 180-degree change here. And they didn't do that without a great deal of discussion, and a great deal of thought went into Magna Carta, because Magna Carta took the king down off of his high position and put him below the feet of the people themselves. And so what we're talking about here is not something that's new. It was there in 1215 A.D., and there's been some societies in the past, usually small societies, where people have tried to maintain this kind of a system. However, we, the human race, we have a tendency to become lazy, mentally lazy and such, and we have a tendency to, when George comes along and says he'll do it, we have a tendency to say, let George do it. And that, of course, gets us into serious trouble. And so I don't want to go on and on here, except that the founders of this country, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, when they fought and won the War of Independence, when they met in Philadelphia at the Constitutional Convention, and then when they added the 10 Articles of the Bill of Rights in December of 1791, everything they did, for the most part, except for a few that were trying to subvert the whole plan, and of course the founders called it an experiment. They called it an experiment, but we have some background that we can use, and so they talked about sovereignty and the Seventh Amendment. It is not taught in the law schools. It's not taught as to what it really is there for. I think the number seven is there because the number seven is considered as God's number. It's the most important of the 10 Articles of the Bill of Rights. It is by far the most important. It's far superior to the First Amendment, far superior to the Fourth and the Fifth, and, of course, those three, the First, Fourth, and Fifth, are the darlings of the civil libertarian organizations, the ACLU and such. And the Seventh is far more important. Now, I have asked people over the years, back in the late 80s, there was a group on the West Coast that were talking about sovereignty and of course, they contacted me and wanted me as part of their promotion. And I said, "Well, tell me, what do you do? How do you use this sovereignty?" And they said, "Well, we just announced to the world that we're sovereign." And of course, there were some of them that went into court and tried to tell the court that they were sovereign, and they were laughed out of the courtroom, or probably right straight to jail on a contempt or whatever. But anyway, I would tell them, I'd say, now, sovereignty means that people accept a responsibility, certain responsibilities, because sovereignty and power are synonymous. And so if you are going to be a sovereign American, you have to be ready, willing, and able to exercise the authority that goes with that sovereignty. And I will never forget, in 1976, I heard Claire Kelly, a great old war horse in the Patriot Movement, and how she was at the National Tax Strike Convention in Denver in October of 76. And she defined sovereignty. She said, sovereignty means that sovereignty rests with he who has the final say on the law. And she explained how that back in the old monarchies, why, if there was a controversy at the lower levels, it would work up through the system, and if it was critical enough, it might make it all the way to the top. They didn't have a Supreme Court. They had a monarch, a king, and he would look at the controversy and he would make his ruling, and that would be the end of the line. That would be the end of the controversy, because he was at the top of the heap and he made the final decision. So what we have when we declare our sovereignty, we have to be prepared to exercise authority, and the Seventh Amendment is where sovereignty of the individual, the jury, is established in the Constitution. There's just no other place in the Constitution that really establishes the sovereignty of the people themselves. And so you can have a jury of 11 people who do not understand what sovereignty means. They do not accept the responsibility, the power that goes with sovereignty. But if you've got one person, just like that king back there when he finally made a decision in a controversy, one person has that authority to say one way or another that this is the way it's going to be. And so with that, I've taken a little more time here than I planned, but I hope Elo has been able to listen in on this, because I think that the timing is right now with the Tea Party people and such and the unrest in the country. I think that it's time to really take this taking dominion, take it very serious. Back to you,
well,
Terry.
We've got at least one person in our chat room who is debating this concept of sovereignty and believes that there's no individual sovereignty in an organized society. And you might just want to take that on for a minute, Red.
You cannot have sovereignty and have in the government and have a republic. The founders gave us a republic. They didn't give us a democracy. The individual that would argue with this doesn't understand what a republic is all about, because what he's basically saying is that he prefers a democracy rather than a republic. And of course, when you have democracy, we should all be very much aware of the political shenanigans, the lies, and all of the propaganda that goes out, and all the vote fraud at our elections and such. And so if it isn't the people that have the sovereignty, then it will be somebody in government. And government cannot be trusted with sovereignty. You just can't trust them with it, and because there are always those certain mental cripples that want to rule and govern other people and tell other people how to live their lives. And so with that, I'll go back to you, Terry.
Well, you know, we've talked a lot about how we've been lied to in our schools, and especially in law school. If somebody's been through law school, they've not been taught the truth. And it's interesting that, you know, how we've been conditioned to believe that the government makes the law. And in fact, in this police state that we exist in, they assume that position as a usurpation of our Constitution. The Constitutional Convention, when it first came together, when there was only 8 states present, and if Martin Babbitts was on here, he's the one that really would be the person to answer this question, and hopefully in about a half an hour he will be on here with us. And when he comes on, I'll let him talk about it. But the fact is, in his book, The Illusion of Freedom, he specifically talks about what went on in that Constitutional Convention. And when there was only 8 states there, they actually passed a vote on whether or not it should in essence be a supreme national government. And they actually got it through, but then when the rest of the states showed up and people started seeing what they had done, they started raising Cain and basically changed it and wrote all of that right out of the Constitution. The Constitution does not lay out a supreme national government. It does give sovereignty at that level to the states, and it is the people of the states who are through a representative government exercises their sovereignty over the national government. But obviously that's not the way it's been carried out, because there have been those globalists, those bankers, those that are really looking to achieve a one-world religion through a one-world government, that have been present since that constitutional convention. And they have instigated every war that we've had. They've been going about defeating the sovereignty of the people and the sovereignty of the states. And, you know, we're under a police state and under a corporate bankruptcy situation, dealing with private contract law and all of that kind of stuff. So they have managed to turn us into at least a democracy, and really, I believe, an oligarchy. And so we're not really existing. We're not living a life under the Constitution as it was written. And we're certainly not living under a situation where the people are sovereign. But it's a de facto condition, not a lawful condition. So we've been deceived in our schools. We've deceived by the media and by the government. And now people really don't have a clear understanding of the supreme law, which is the Constitution, which did require the consent of the governed, which does give us unalienable rights, not give us, but protects or reserves those unalienable rights which we had before the Constitution and still do if we exercise them. And maybe Red, while we're waiting for Elo or Martin to come on, you can talk a little more about exactly what way is best to exercise them. A lot of people think that we exercise it through our vote at the ballot box. Well, I know you don't believe that that's the best vote we have, and so maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
Well, the vote at the ballot box is, of the three votes that we the people have, the vote in the ballot box is has the least value to we the people. We're totally out of kilter here. Here we are in an election, a midterm election cycle, and there are millions upon millions of dollars that are being used to try to win at the ballot box. And if we just had 1%, if we had just 1% of that money that was contributed to the Fully Informed Jury Association, they would be able to expand their programs, and more information, more truth would go out if people just understood that political campaigns are not a good investment. The big corporations, of course, the Supreme Court kind of give them a freedom to get involved in the political campaigns, and that is absolutely it's absolutely wrong, because a corporation is a creature created by the government, and there's too much of a connection there. There's too much that's out of sight of the people, and it gives the corporation way too much power, and with that kind of money. And so anyway, if people would just read the Seventh Amendment, you've got that clause there that says that all facts tried by a jury cannot be reexamined by any court in the land. Now, that this is mind-boggling when you consider how we have been brain-manipulated for so many years, telling us that the Supreme Court, that they have the final say on the law. And here we find that it is we the people who have the final say on the law. The U.S. Supreme Court, of course, they can be acting in an advisory capacity and all of that, and they can settle the disputes between the corporations. They can settle the disputes between the states and such. When it comes down to the laws that affect you and I, affect us people at the level of the masses, we the people must retain absolute control of it. If we don't, we're going to be controlled by that law. We're going to pay through the nose for the mistakes of the politicians. We're going to pay through the nose for the arrogance and the criminal behavior of politicians and such. And that's what's happening to us right now. And so I think that it's time that we give the American people the opportunity, give them the education that they need to recognize the authority that they have. And of course, that's why I went back to the book of Genesis in our Bible, to the Great Commission. You see a lot of your religious organizations, your Christian religious organizations, say, oh, the Great Commission is in the New Testament. Go ye into all the world and preach the gospel. That's not the Great Commission. The Great Commission was given right in the beginning. And we were told to take dominion. We were to subdue. We have a responsibility to maintain control of politicians and public servants at all levels. If we don't, they will control us, and you end up with the situation that we have right now in this country, where I see a political ad that said, had the picture of all these babies, and they said every baby that is born has a tax or a debt of $40,000+ when they're born. You see, this is something that is so evil. In the Proverbs, it tells us a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children. And I used to use that a great deal when I spoke at investment conferences, and I would transpose that, and I'd say, a bad man leaveth debts to his children and his children's children, and so we have to assume that we're a nation of bad men at this time, and I'll argue anybody that disputes that.
Well, there's a pretty good argument going on in chat. I wish you could be in there. Fortunately, there's the one person that's debating against the rest is way outnumbered. So, fortunately, quite a few of our listeners have been really informed on this. But the statement was made that a jury only has the right to apply the law, not to judge it. So I'll let you go on that one, Red.
Well, that's law school training, and of course there is no place. Of course, all you have to do is go back to about 1800 when Samuel Chase, who was one of our Supreme Court justices, had presided over a trial, and he was a great American. He had served his country well. He had been one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. But Samuel Chase, as a U.S. Supreme Court justice, went out and presided over a trial. And when it came for time for jury instructions, he told the jury, he said, I will judge the law. You judge the facts. And this raised the hackles on so many people. People just were outraged, and it run over into the U.S. Congress about what Justice Samuel Chase had done, and so in the House of Representatives they passed articles of impeachment against Samuel Chase because of what he said. and in the courtroom. And so then it went to the U.S. Senate for a trial. And the only thing that saved the justice from being impeached, the only thing that saved him was he gave his testimony. And he said, everybody knows. You notice what he said. Now, you can go check me out because there's two volumes. You might have trouble finding these volumes. The record of the trial, the impeachment trial of Samuel Chase, and his testimony is in there, and he says, everybody knows that the people have the right to judge the law as well as the facts. And I challenge anybody to go back and take a look. Now, we're talking about right back in the early years of our constitutional republic, and the judge says, everybody knows. Well, they have managed to change that today so that very few know. And it was done by way of propaganda. It was done by way of taking advantage of we the people and our gullibility and that type of thing. Every judge in this country, every federal judge, every state judge in this country, for the most part, are doing the same, committing the same criminal act as Judge Samuel Chase used, and it got him impeached by in the House, but he was able to escape the impeachment in the Senate. But every state and federal judge in this country today is guilty of the same crime that Judge Samuel Chase was tried for.
Red, Samuel Chase was impeached, correct?
He was a justice of the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yes, but he was impeached.
The House passed articles of impeachment against him. But you see, if you remember the Bill Clinton escapade, the House, they passed the articles of impeachment, but when Bill Clinton went to trial in the U.S. Senate, the U.S. Senate refused to make it final. And that's what happened with Samuel Chase. But Samuel Chase, it was his career was ruined at that point. He, like I say, he had served the country well, and he made this serious mistake, and it cost him a great deal.
Yeah, but we've got a statement in chat, and this is really good. I'm really thankful that we've got the kind of intense discussion going on we've got in the chat tonight, because I think it really draws attention and makes us be very particular about explaining this. And a justice is impeachable. So the statement in chat was made that you cannot impeach a justice, yet we're sitting here reporting a historical fact that Samuel Chase, who was a Supreme Court justice, was in fact impeached. Correct?
Yes, and I can't give you specifics at this point, but I'm fairly certain that there has been some Supreme Court justices since then that have found themselves in hot water on some similar things, but I can't give you anything specific on that right now.
If they can't be impeached, then how is it that they could be removed?
There isn't anyone, any public servant that is immune from impeachment if he is in violation of the law, and if the U.S. Congress, if they pass the articles of articles of impeachment, then that person will go to trial in the U.S. Senate.
we heard from one lady, Joyce Rosenwald, who I believe was absolutely correct when she reported to us that many, or in fact almost all of the judges today are no longer deemed by statute within each state, they are no longer deemed a public official. And that in its in and of itself removes them from the accountability of the people. It also, you know, changes the structure of the court. And, you know, this is, I think, a major problem that we really need to be looking at. We need to be following up on, because it's just like you said about them not being able to make an impartial decision. If they are, in fact, nothing more than a government agent as opposed to a public official, then how can we hold them accountable? And if we can't hold them accountable, we shouldn't be paying them.
I think we aren't paying enough attention, perhaps, to the grand jury, because the power of a grand jury is unlimited because of the sovereignty of the grand juror members, and they can take on any project they want to take on. And if you've got a U.S. Supreme Court justice that goes out and abuses his authority and violates the laws of our land, there is nothing to stop a grand jury from investigating that jurist and indicting him for criminal, for whatever crimes he's committed. That grand jury, the power is there because it is made up of the sovereigns.
And that's another way that they've circumvented us. They have now taken control of the grand juries by lying and by deception. The judges control them, and the prosecuting attorneys control them, and they've done it through deception. If all it takes is one person who understands what their rights are about judging the law, to completely change and bring about a runaway grand jury. Because one person can tie that whole thing up and convince the others on the jury that they've been lied to. And you've seen it happen, have you not?
I've seen some very interesting cases. I remember a case in the early 80s. U.S. attorneys in Utah, in collusion with the federal judges and the IRS, they decided that they were they had a target list of I think it was seven individuals that were more or less outspoken. You might say leaders in the tax protest, especially in the West, and they targeted those seven people. I may be wrong; it may have been eight, but it was seven or eight, and this is a long time ago. And there was a lot of people kind of sweating this one out, and the government had more or less given the prosecution a blank check and didn't care who or how much money they spent. And so they subpoenaed witnesses from all over the United States. And there were two people from Billings, Montana that were subpoenaed that I knew of. And of course, the government had to pay their airfare to Salt Lake and house them there and pay all their expenses, and and such. So it was a very expensive situation, and they paraded these witnesses before that grand jury. And there may have been hundreds. We don't know exactly how many they had, but there was a great, great number. And there was one of the people from Billings, Montana, that was subpoenaed, and he was a young fellow. And he had gone to, he had worked on a construction project in Arizona, and he had gone to a tax protest meeting down there, and they had his name. They probably got it by taking the license number of his car in the parking lot or whatever. But they subpoenaed him, and he was only about 24 or 25 years old, and it really shook him up. It really, because he hadn't really joined anything. He hadn't, been out on the stump telling the people to quit paying income taxes or anything else. And he was actually an introvert, and so he was a kind of a quiet type of a person. Well, anyway, he came out to my place, and he was all shook up. And I settled him down and said, "I said this is a great opportunity, and I'm just real I'm glad that you were subpoenaed." And of course, he didn't appreciate that too much. But anyway, I explained to him how the grand jury worked somewhat, and. He was a sharp young fellow, and so I gave him, when it come time for him to leave, I talked to him a couple of times. When it came time for him to go to Salt Lake, I gave him a copy of what is known as the Confidential IRS Tax Audit Guide, and that is a manual that was put out in 1975, and it was not right inside the front cover was the foreword written by the commissioner of the IRS, and he said this manual was not to get into the hands of anyone outside of the service. And, in other words, don't talk to him about transparency. Anyway, this manual is... We still have a couple of them around. We had them printed, and I don't know exactly how much volume, but it was big volume, and we sold these nationwide, and we weren't the only ones that were doing this. They were very accurate. On some of it, they said that the Fifth Amendment did not give the IRS the authority to go in and go through a man's books and records. That they did not have that authority. That was the first time that I became aware of a judicial notice, and they explain what a judicial notice is, and of course we've used the judicial notices a great deal since then. But anyway, I gave him a copy of that tax audit guide. I underlined and more or less indexed it so that he could turn to these different points in there real quick, and. I really didn't think he would do what I told him. I said, they're going to ask you one or two questions, no more. That's all. Because you have no information for them. They were just throwing money away to subpoena this kind of a witness. And
Red.
I said,
our money. They were throwing our money away.
You know who that voice is, don't you, Red? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, was that Elo?
Yes,
that's
I'm
Elo
sorry
Jones.
I was late joining you, yes.
Well, we've been having a good time.
I can tell you are. Could I make a comment, please?
Go ahead.
You have the floor.
Thank you, sirs. I wanted to say to everyone who is listening, we are all looking for remedies, for what's going on right now. And even though it isn't an immediate solution, it is a solution we need to embrace. During the time William Penn was preaching the Quaker religion in London and the jury refused to find him guilty and they were thrown in jail, it was obvious that the jurors had lost a lot of their power and they were intent upon regaining it, going back to the Magna Carta. Jurors have lost a lot of their authority and power in this nation as well, and judges and others use all the tricks they can to keep juries from knowing their power. For everybody out there who's involved in any kind of a struggle, any kind of an effort, whatever it is, to take back our country for the Constitution, to restore the human rights on which this country was founded, the individual human rights. FIJA doesn't need to supplant what you're doing, but please get in touch with us. Let us give you the information so that you will know why you should serve on juries and grand juries and why you should encourage everyone else to do so. This is something you can do as an individual. It is the most powerful voice and the most powerful vote you have. It doesn't matter how corrupt the judges are. It doesn't matter how much they are in collusion with the prosecutors, and those people work get paid by the same employer, I want to remind you of that, as do most of the police, or all the police and a lot of the other witnesses. But if the jurors who are there understand what they can do and they understand their authority, they can do just what the jurors did in the William Penn case. They can refuse to enforce these bad laws. When I was on last week, I talked about the fact that we cannot get benevolent, good, reasonable laws from corrupt lawmakers. Corrupt lawmakers are going to make corrupt laws. You know, there's all these sayings about this, like you can't make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, et cetera, et cetera. You cannot get good laws from bad politicians. So we must go into the jury room. Make sure you're qualified for jury service. Run to serve. Get our literature. Find out how important this is. And no matter what else you're doing, and I encourage you to do 10 other things or 20, but use this opportunity to protect other people, to protect their rights, and in turn protect your own. This is something you can do. Our website is fija.org. If you go on our website, you'll find a lot of information. If you would like a free information packet, our call-in free number is just call this number, leave your name and address, and tell them where you heard about us, and a free packet of information will go out to you, which you can study. And then I would encourage you to form a study group, or if you belong to a Tea Party group, wherever you go, whomever you talk with, church, PTA, whatever, share this information with them. We must get the word out 10 times more than we are now. And we're doing everything we can. We need your help. This is a peaceful way to move mountains. But first, you must pick up your jury summons and report for jury duty. Our 800 number is 1-800-TELJURY. That's Tell Jury with one L. 1-800-TELJURY. You'll receive a free packet of information. You could study it and then share it with your friends and family and your neighbors, with your coworkers, with whomever you can. Help spread the word. Let's turn this country around by reforming the role of the jury and restoring it to what it is supposed to have been since the Magna Carta was signed, for goodness sakes. And certainly it was always intended by the founders of this nation that the jurors would be there as the final line of defense against government tyranny. The government could try to do a whole lot of things, but in order to enforce any of these bad laws, the person had a right to trial by jury. And once they got before that jury, the jury had the right to refuse to enforce these bad laws, just as they did during the times of King John and during the times when William Penn was put on trial. Let's not overlook that. It is a very significant tool in our larger tool of freedom opportunities that we can use today to advance this movement, to advance this struggle we have going on, to restore our liberty and to restore justice. There's very little justice left in the court system right now. It's time for us to restore it through the only way it can honestly and truly be restored, and that's by jurors who are not employees or agents of the government. Thank you. Thank you, Terry. Thank you, Red, for letting me say that.
Red, I'll let you respond if you want to.
I'll tell you, I'm just real glad that she came back for an encore because she is so articulate. And do you want to take your break, or are you going to bypass your break again?
I believe that since Elo was, not here for most of the first hour, we shouldn't waste any of her time.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot I had to go do something else, so I just ran back as fast as I could. I really want to talk to everyone who's listening, and I want you to go out and I want you to be a seed. I want you to go out and I want you to plant yourself in your community. And we talked about this last week, about the need to plant ourselves in our communities and speak for fairness and justice, to become compassionate and caring members of our community, to lead simple lives. Don't go out and try to live a flamboyant lifestyle, because that's just targeting yourself for asset forfeiture. The government is desperate right now. They'll seize anything they can. And until we get informed jurors in place in every court in the land, you will have no recourse if they come after you. Lead a simple life. Share what you have with your friends and family and with your community. We have wonderful materials available to help you. We have a PowerPoint presentation that you can take and share with your civic club or your women's group or your men's group. We have a special set of presentations for churches. We have a special brochure that you can take to your shooting range or to your gunsmith or to the shop where you go to buy ammunition. We have another one on body ownership that you can take to your naturopath, to people who own the health food store in your area. Get to this information. You can, again, you can call and get it free, 1-800-TELJURY. That's 1-800-TELJURY with one L. In the numbers, that's 1-800-835-5879. You can make a difference. Plant yourself in your community. Send down roots of justice and share with people what you have learned. Sit down and talk with them. Take every opportunity to talk with them about why they need to serve on grand juries, why they need to serve on juries, why they need to talk to other people about doing the same thing. Take every opportunity. We have something that a lot of FIJA people do. They go out, and we call it our 3x3 program. Take three pieces of literature, go to the grocery store or wherever, you know, wherever you're going, whatever store, someplace you're going, the rodeo. Take three pieces of literature, FIJA literature, with you. Give three pieces of literature to three different people standing within 3 feet of you at some time during that event or your outing or wherever you are. Just do that once a week and hand it to them and say to them sincerely, I know, like me, you are really concerned about restoring our liberty and restoring justice to our nation. I want you to read this, and if you want more information, it shows you on this where to call to get more information, because it does in all of our literature. It tells you where to call or where to go to the website. Ask them to help you turn things around and reestablish justice and freedom in our nation, and tell them that they can help you by starting right in their community and with their family and their friends. If you do that once a week, 3x3, and you ask the other people to do the same, and they can call and get free literature from us, remember, so it's not going to cost them anything to do this, we can make a big difference very quickly in this nation. Where we have had active FIJA campaigns, we have had phenomenal successes. We had a case in Missouri not too long ago where we flooded an entire county with FIDRA literature. And when the case was brought to trial, it was simply dismissed because they knew they could not get a conviction. They dismissed the case. The people who had been put on trial came outside with tears streaming down their eyes, and there were about six FIDRA guys outside who had been handing out this literature and just started hugging all of them. Thank you, because when they tried to seat a jury, they people were carrying FIDRA literature. And finally, the prosecuting attorney said, ask to meet the defense attorney and the judge in chambers, and he said, I don't want to try this case. I'm moving for a dismissal. We're not going to try this. You see, that's the kind of power we have as peaceful, informed citizens. When we know what our authority is, we can stand out there, share that authority with others, give them hope, and show them how to affect change. One individual can hang a jury. Three informed jurors can begin to persuade other jurors to refuse to convict when the rights of the person on trial are being violated and the laws under which they are being tried are inferior laws that contradict the Constitution. And we all know that any law which is repugnant to the Constitution is no law at all. That's a true statement. If a law violates the Constitution, it is no law at all. I believe it was just a few days ago in Wisconsin when a judge declared there, who had been doing some reading, that all the laws that made you have to get a permit for concealed carry or register your weapons or whatever, all those laws violated both the Second and the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, and they were null and void in the state of Wisconsin. We have some judges who are stepping into line because, not to give them too much credit, but a lot of them went to law schools where they weren't really taught what the Constitution means. They were taught how to win cases, and I'm sorry to say this in a way, but I think it must be said, they are taught how to lie. They are taught how to lie to win cases. They are not taught how to do justice. They are not taught how to be servants and disciples of the Constitution and the common law. They are taught how to win cases. They are taught how to write briefs. They are taught how to take cases on appeal. But they are not taught how to render justice under the law. They are not taught very much about our common law heritage. They are not taught about the heritage left to us by the founders of this nation. They are not taught the history of the Bill of Rights, which is really a bill of limitations on government. Lawyers are not taught these things. Lawyers who know this have had to take the time to learn them, usually on their own, or seek out special classes. And so these same lawyers practice law, they become judges, and they still don't know. It is incumbent upon us to be their teachers, and we can best teach them from the jury box. We can best teach them from our seat on the grand jury. We can best teach them by showing them what we are supposed to be doing and making them understand that we know our authority and we are exercising it in every instance, in every case, on behalf of every person in this nation. And that's what you need to become a part of. Please call our 800 number and get some literature. Please study it. Go on our website. Study the information on our website. You can print out free brochures from our website. Go to our library. All of our brochures are in a free PDF format. Click on that. Print it off to your printer. They're free. Hand them out. More power to you. If you need some more, call us, let us know, or email us at aji@fija.org or call us at 1-800-TELL-JURY. We will get more information to you. You can order information online. If you don't have an extra nickel, call us. We'll make sure you get some anyway. We are here to educate people. We are here to spread the word. That is our mission. Your job is to take the word and pass it on to a dozen people every month. and ask them to do the same thing. Ask them to listen to some of the broadcasts and podcasts. Refer them back to this program and the one from last week and the other ones that Red and Terry are doing. They're on the website. You can get them a really good education by simply sending them here to listen. Have them over for coffee and cookies, for heaven's sake, and have them sit down and listen to it with you, and then have a discussion about your plan of action. I'll be quiet for a minute. Do we need to take a break?
No, actually, you know, I kind of, when I knew you were online, I kind of interrupted Red a while ago, and I don't think you finished the story, and I got chastised in chat because we had a couple of people that wanted to hear the rest of Red's story.
Well, maybe we better let Red finish his story about the IRS document, because I was actually listening to that with quite a bit of interest, too. We have a copy of it here in the office.
Let me finish. This young fellow, I told him, I said, now, they're only going to ask you a couple of questions, and then they're just going to usher you out. And I said, before they usher you out, you say, wait a minute. I want to talk to this grand jury. And I didn't think he would do it. I thought, man, he's going to be so glad to get out of there. But I said, he had this bunch of books in his hands that I had given him, this information, this tax audit guide and some of my books. And I said, you might just surprise that prosecutor, and you might get a chance to talk. And it took the prosecutor by surprise when he said what he did, and the prosecutor said, well, that's up to the foreman of the grand jury. And the grand jury foreman said, we'd like to hear what you have to say. And the prosecutor was on his way out, and he must have taken about 10 minutes to explain to them. And I told him, I said, when you're there, you offer to give that grand jury all of this information. And that's what he did. He offered it, and the grand jury, they were just real happy to get it. And you know, that grand jury sat for months. They spent many, many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars trying to get seven people, as I remember. And when that grand jury came to their final decision, they did not indict anyone. They just absolutely refused to indict anyone because they had that information. And so ELO is talking about getting information out. we just can't emphasize that too much, that we have to get information out to people. And it's not that difficult to do. The world out there is full of people that are searching for answers. How did we get in such a terrible predicament, this great nation of ours? How did we get into this terrible, terrible position? Well, we got into this position because we weren't paying attention, and we let people tell us the lies, and we believed the lies. Mm-hmm. My friend Pat Shannon, a reporter, has just published a book, Everything They Told Me Was a Lie. And he goes back, and I don't know how many presidential administrations. He goes back a long ways. And in fact, there's going to be two volumes. There's one volume has just come out now. And Everything They Told Me Was a Lie. And he takes on all of the 911 and the moonshot and all of that, and I'm losing my voice, so I'm going to have to stop here for a bit.
Thank you, Red, for finishing the story, and thank you for letting me interrupt you as well.
Well, that's not really an interruption.
It was a break from a sponsor.
Yes.
But I did want to come on and talk about that. And I know when we sit in the evening with our families over dinner and we thank our Creator for all that we have and all the opportunities before us, in a small corner of our minds these days, we're often thinking, but what can I do? What can I do to make things better for my family and for other families as well? What's one little thing I can do? And I hope that all of you are thinking that way and looking for ways that you can help to make things better in our nation. And I believe we must start in our own communities and educate the people in our neighborhoods. If we begin there, it will grow because they will talk to their relatives about it who live in another state, perhaps. And that is really the core of human behavior and human goodness, is that we can reach out to each other and generously share information which helps each other and provide people with a way that they can exercise their authority and their power in this country to bring the government back into line, to bring the courts back into justice, and to set things right for so many people who are scared these days and confused. A lot of people aren't even sure what's going on. They're just confused about it all, and they aren't quite sure whom they should blame. I was at the post office the other day mailing a package, and it was a book, but if the media package weighs more than, I think it's 13 ounces or 16 ounces, you must take it to the window and present it to a postal clerk so that they can see who it's from. And when I did that, I said, this is ridiculous that every time I want to mail something like this, I must come and present it to you, even though it already has the postage on it. And one of the fellows worked there, he said, oh, well, blame that on the Unabomber. And I said, oh, no, I don't blame the Unabomber at all. I blame the government. I don't even blame you guys. You just work here. Some bureaucrat sitting somewhere decided that they could pass a law which makes everything far more difficult for us. And then, of course, people were listening to me. So I talked about TSA and some other things as well and ended up getting into a good discussion. Fortunately, I had some FIJA literature in my purse, so I was able to share it with several people at the post office. You never know when you'll get an opportunity to teach somebody. So be prepared. Always be prepared to hand someone something when they say, oh, there's so many things going wrong and there's nothing we can do about it. Say, I have something you can do about it. Here, let's talk about this for 3 minutes. And if you're standing in the line at the grocery store, give brochures to everybody who's listening because they will be listening. It's fascinating to me how many opportunities present themselves every day for me to share information about what juries and grand juries can do with absolute strangers, people I don't know. And they thank me. And sometimes I hear from them a week or two later. People I've met at the post office, they'll say, do you remember me? I was that person you were talking with at the post office 3 weeks ago who had just moved here, and you gave me that brochure. I want to get some more of those to give to my friends at the bowling alley. So we never know when we're going to strike a chord with another person. Be prepared. Have some literature. Have things that you can share with them. And we're happy to give you everything you need to carry the word and spread it. Again, this is a peaceful, lawful, honest way to bring justice back into the courtrooms and fairness back to the justice system. So please use it. Thank you.
Well, I'm hoping that we're going to get a pleasant phone call from our friend Martin Babbitts here pretty soon, because I really want, Elo, you to be able to interact with him. Are you familiar with his book, Illusion of Freedom, by chance?
I'm not. I was reading about it on your website and made a note about it, but of course the government presents us with so many illusions, and our poor innocent children, if they're trapped in government schools, are taught these illusions. And he's right. We have an illusion of freedom. And we suffer under a lot of illusions, but that veil is shredding. That veil of illusions is shredding. It's being torn asunder. The truth is spreading. So I would love to talk with him about that, because I'm sure he knows that too, and it's wonderful that he's written such a good book. I'll look
forward
to reading
it. The two of you sing out of the same songbook, in that he believes that the solutions will be found within each state, and that it will be found through resolution and nullification. There's another fellow, I believe the guy's name is Woods, that's come out with a book on that's titled Nullification.
Yes, Tom Woods.
Right. And
those are
very similar.
Those are good things to do. However, they should not replace and cannot replace the authority of the individual juror. One person walking around who doesn't need a politician or anyone to help them do this magnificent gesture of refusing to convict people under bad laws. One person. That it's the most powerful vote we have. And people don't know that because they haven't been taught that in school. There are only 12 jurors. One juror in most jurisdictions, sometimes it's a majority, but in most jurisdictions, one juror can hang the jury, can nullify the law in this case. One person. It doesn't take an act of Congress. It doesn't take your state representatives or legislatures to nullify anything. I'm glad they're doing that, and they should be encouraged. But you, as one individual, making no other effort, signing no documents, relying upon no other person, can do this yourself as one independent, conscientious human being who's guided by justice. And so whatever else you're doing, do this one thing. Serve on juries. Serve on grand juries. Refuse to indict and refuse to convict anyone. First of all, if there's no human victim, then there's no crime. Secondly, if the law under which they are going to be tried or are being tried is in violation of our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and all of our human rights, if it violates any human rights, then it violates the rights of all humans. Let me say that again. If that law violates any human rights, it violates the rights of all humans and should never be enforced by a conscientious, knowledgeable juror. Never. So we can look to the states to do nullification, but don't wait for that to happen. Start in your community. Nullify the laws where people are being tried for victimless actions, where people are being tried under laws that violate their human rights, where people are being tried under laws that violate the common law, that violate the Constitution, laws that violate the Bill of Rights. It's a long list. And the government is making a lot more laws these days because the government is hungry and greedy. The government is broke at so many levels, from the cities and the counties, to the states, to the federal government. Governments are broke. And they are imposing all kinds of new fines and fees on us so that they can keep their positions of power and keep getting their bloated salaries and bloated benefits. You can do this one thing yourself. You don't need to depend upon anyone else on earth. Go serve on a jury. Go serve on a grand jury. Refuse to be an instrument of tyranny for the government. Become an instrument of justice. Peaceful instrument of justice. You can do that as one individual.
Elo, let's talk about getting on a jury for a minute. I've had a couple of interesting experiences here in the last few months, and a very interesting one here in just the last week. Red, you're breathing a little loud in the microphone, so I'll just let you know. Within the last week, I was in the presence of two attorneys, and one attorney was actually representing the other attorney. And they were having a candid conversation in my presence regarding judges. And the statement was made that these judges have become insane.
Yeah.
I got a lot of background noise.
I just stepped outside, and there's a helicopter over my house. I really stepped outside to see what was making all the noise. Sorry.
I would say, is it a black helicopter? But they probably all look black this time of night.
I can't see it. I think it's a fire spotter. I think it's one of our fire spotter helicopters, actually. So one lawyer was saying to the other lawyer that judges are insane.
Yeah, that they basically think they're God. And I'm sitting here listening to this conversation between these two lawyers, and I started laughing. And they go, "What, you don't believe us?" And I said, the only thing that surprises me is that you're only saying some of them, and that, you know, that it took you this long to figure it out. So I'm starting to tease these guys, but it's really funny because what happened was is that one of the attorneys had worked with this judge before, and they said that they were not really ever had a private practice, that they'd been always an administrator type person, and that they really had it out for them, and that they had a conflict to appear on behalf of a client when there was you know, they had another case somewhere else in a different municipality and couldn't be in both places at the same time. And this judge is just climbing all over this attorney and trying to literally put them in jail for contempt. I said to them, now you know what it feels like to be one of your clients.
Yes. And judges, as with other people who work for government, where they know they have the option of using force against us, become addicted to their power. They want more power. Mm-hmm. That's why they don't want to let the jurors know about their power, because they want to keep all the power for themselves.
Okay, now my other experience that I wanted you to talk about. I went to serve jury duty. I was a couple of people outside of the primary group they were interviewing. I was, if they had kicked a couple more people off, I would maybe gotten to be on the jury. But I'm sitting here listening to the jury interview going on between the prosecuting attorney and the defense, and This was a DUI situation, invalid driver's license situation, but I think there was, felony charges involved because of some other circumstances. But the question was asked by the prosecuting attorney whether or not the people on the jury believed that having a driver's license and having the right to drive, whether it was a right or a privilege. And then wanted to know if anyone thought that that was a right rather than a privilege. And, of course, if anybody had spoken up and said, "I think it's a right," they were gone. I mean, even if they even suspected that they thought it was a right, they were gone.
Yes.
Well, now, that there's your setup for saying, okay, how do you get on the jury knowing the truth going in?
Rather than try to get into that too much tonight, I'm going to recommend that people go to our website, which is fija.org, open the library, and you'll find a document there called Surviving Voir Dire, which is the process jurors go through. And it will give you a lot of information about how to get on the jury. But let me add this, because I think it's worth noting, especially in today's climate in the courtroom, that in most instances, if it is any kind of a trial at all, other than maybe for a traffic ticket, there's going to be jury stacking going on by the defense attorney, the prosecuting attorney, and the judge. Juries, potential jurors, are often dismissed in capital cases if they say that they will not enforce the death penalty. There's the death penalty qualification. That means that it's not really a cross-representation of the community. They only pick those people who said, sure, if we decide he's guilty, we'll be happy, you know, we'll give him the death penalty. There are, as you said, where they ask you if you believe that this is a right instead of a privilege. And all those people who say it's a right, who could be there to defend the person on trial if this is the question, the right to travel unmolested on the common thoroughfares, which is part of the common law, by the way, they are thrown out of the jury pool because they're not willing to bow to the political line of the government. So the jury is being stacked, and in fact, we laughingly say sometimes here in the office that voir dire is just the French term for jury stacking. And that's exactly what happened to those people. If they admitted that they believed that they have a right to travel on thoroughfares without paying taxes and paying fees and buying a license, et cetera, because when it gets down to it, that's what you're doing, isn't it? You're paying a tax, so you have a piece of paper, a receipt, so that you can go out. Yes, they give you a test, but they only give you the test once, and after that, they're just collecting their bribes to pay their salaries so you can travel on the public thoroughfares. I need to be very clear about that because we, in this nation, again, it's that illusion of freedom. We sometimes don't understand how far we have fallen from the intentions of the founders, how far away from freedom we have fallen from the intentions of the people who fought and died to establish this nation. We don't understand how far we have fallen from the Magna Carta and the members of the jury who refused to convict William Penn and instead went to prison. We have fallen away very far from freedom. And so when you start reading the Constitution, reading the Declaration of Independence, learning more about what this nation is supposed to be, how it is supposed to be structured, who is actually in control of the government, who are the bosses of the judges. When you learn these things and you go to court, you must be circumspect to get on a jury. And I think we talked about this last time, but maybe not because I've done three other interviews since then. But during one of those, someone said, well, I just can't lie. I mean, I'm not going to be dishonest and say I you know, don't know something that I know or whatever. And I said, okay, if you can't, then do this. Instead, stand up and say, Your Honor, I have a question. Be respectful. You know, be nice. Your Honor, I have a question. And they'll probably say, okay, what's your question? And that's when you ask, when did jurors lose the authority to judge the law as well as the facts in any case being tried before them? The judge won't answer. You will be excused from the jury pool and escorted from the courtroom, but every other juror, potential juror who's there, will have heard that question. And there have been instances when judges have excused entire jury pools as tainted because that question was asked. We had a case that's just come up in Florida because we have a lot of people working in Florida right now. We have to educate twice as many people in Florida, by the way, because in all but capital cases there, based on a Supreme Court decision, Williams v. the state of Florida, you only get six people on your jury, so it's much easier to manipulate the jury and much more difficult to get an informed juror, twice as difficult, right? So we have to educate twice as many people there, so we have informed jurors on the jury. And we had a case where everybody going into the courthouse was being handed Fiji literature, and the judge stood up and said to the people in the jury pool, okay, I know you all got one of these pieces of literature outside. You must ignore it. Those people are lying to you. So if you read this, it's all lies. You must ignore it. And now we'll seat the jury. Well, the defense attorney is now filing an appeal because the judge told them that the information in Fiji literature was all lies, even though it was all absolutely the truth. This, I just got the appeal motion today, just this evening. So when you go in to serve on a jury, when you're called for jury duty, again, go read the information on our website. Call our 1-800-TEL-JURY number. Get our free information packet. It will help you learn how to get seated, how to survive voir dire, how to get seated on a jury, even though there's so much jury stacking going on these days. And the jury stacking is always in favor, by the way, of the government, because the prosecutor can stack the jury far more easily than the defense attorney, because the prosecutor and the judge, guess what, they have the same employer. So you have to be a little cagey. And if you're concerned about being dishonest, ask yourself, if there was a knock on your door and you opened the door and there was an SS officer standing there who said, are you hiding Jews in your house? And you knew you had a family in the attic, would you turn them over? No, you would lie. In this country, we are now an occupied nation. I'm sure you all know that. We live in a police state. We are occupied. Most of our police, local police, have been militarized by the federal government. We must act as peacefully and lawfully as we can. We must be circumspect, but we also must take every opportunity to peacefully protect our rights. And one way to do that is to serve on a jury. I know I went beyond what you wanted, probably wanted to comment, but anyway.
No, a lot of people get into that situation and they have not thought it out before they get there. And it's not just important to understand what your rights are as a juror, but it's also important to understand what you're going to go through and the kind of questions you're going to get asked before you get there. And I, you know, just in the same way that this defense attorney, I thought it was brilliant the way he put forth the question to the jurors about presumption of innocence. He asked them to actually visualize the person that they had the highest amount of respect for in their whole life, the one person that they respect above everyone else that they've ever known. And then imagine that someone comes forward and says that this person has raped and murdered a young girl. What's going to go through your mind when they try to accuse this person who you have the highest respect for that of this heinous crime? And of course, everybody's image in their mind is, well, that just can't be true, not of that person. There's no way.
Yes.
Well, then he said, okay, now that is the kind of presumption of innocence that you owe to this defendant.
Oh, that's excellent.
Well, it's the same thing as an SS officer coming to your door, and here sits your own children and your wife, and you've got a Jewish family hidden in a secret room in your house, and they ask you if there's anybody else in the house. It's the same situation. You've got to think about what you're going to say and how you're going to respond before you get there. And recognize the fact that even God will forgive you for doing what's right.
Yes, okay. Amen. I believe that too, yes. And one other way to arm yourself before you go in, as you're going in to serve on jury duty, when you're called in the jury pool, before you go in, read everything that we have available on our website or that we can send to you. But before you go in, the last thing you might want to do is ask God for guidance and for courage and for honesty and for protection. And then go into the jury room with your head up. And even though they will try to treat you as though you are a six-year-old in first grade who has been caught chewing gum, because that's about the way they treat jurors, do not let them diminish your sense of yourself or your sense of justice. Remember, you are there with a higher calling. You are there to serve justice, not to make the prosecutor or the judge happy, not to rubber stamp the government. You are there as an independent thinking person with a conscience to serve justice. Please call our 800 number, 1-800-TELJURY in numbers. That's 1-800-835-5879. Ask for our free information packet. We will mail it to you by first class mail. We will neither keep nor share your information. Please let us know that you heard about Fija on this show. Please visit our website, which is fija.org. You can get a lot of information there. If you have any questions, please feel free to email me at AJI, that's American Justice Institute, or it's really American Jury Institute, AJI at Fija, FIJA.org. Just send an email, and in the subject line, write question for ELO, and it will get to my desk. I promise you I'll get back to you within, I'll say a week, because I'm really busy right now. I've been out doing a lot of speeches and doing a lot of interviews, and also we're in our busy fundraising time, and we have all this great stuff going on in Florida, and you can read about that if you go to florida.fija.org. You'll be on our Florida website, and you can find out about what all the people are doing down there at federal and county courthouses across the state, because we have this campaign to educate twice as many jurors there as we would normally try to educate because of this decision that we have only jurors of 12 people. I'm going to have to get off the phone in a minute, and I really want to thank you for letting me interrupt the discussion tonight, and I'm hoping you'll have me back in a few weeks when I'll be back in pocket. I'm going to be gone for a while, but then I'll be back about, I think, November the 6th or 7th, and I'm hoping you'll have me on again soon so we can talk about this some more. I'd like to talk a little bit more about what Fija is doing across the country, about a new brochure that I'm working on right now called Be a Skeptical Juror, because of all the collusion between prosecutors and judges that's being exposed, because of all the greed we're seeing with judges issuing big fines so they get part of that money, it goes into their retirement account, about what's going on with police and why we must be especially skeptical of a lot of the testimony from the police when we serve on juries and we're listening to the testimony of these government employees. Thank you so much.
ELO, we only have about 17 minutes left in the show, and since our other guest has not made it on here yet, it's been wonderful to have you on as long as you've been with us, and I have to tell you that, it's exciting for Red and I whenever you want to come on. So, I mean, we love to have you on. We love how articulate you are, and frankly, you came in and saved our bacon a little bit, so... You are always welcome here, and all you have to do is let either Red or I know, and we will schedule you back on anytime you'd like to come, because your message is as important, if not more important, than possibly anything we talk about on this show. And so we value you, we value Fija, we value your message. And Red, I'm going to let you speak at this point, because I know you probably got something to say before we let ELO get out of here. So.
Well, I got my voice back temporary, I guess. I want to bring out how I started out tonight, going to the book of Genesis in our Holy Bibles, and looking at the Great Commission that was given to Adam and Eve, and that was that they were to subdue and take dominion of planet Earth. And that commission is still, it still means us. We're part of the family of Adam and Eve, and we, that commission came down through the ages, and it rests on every one of us, and we can ignore it, or we can participate, and if people ignore it, they're not living the kind of life that our Creator would like to have us live, and they're missing out on a great deal. It's exciting to be part of the effort for mankind to take dominion of the planet away from all the tyrants, all of the great outlaws that get all the news, make all the news and all that, and take that dominion away from them. And I think that with the world situation as it is today, I think we've got an audience out there that wants to hear what we have to say, and we need to say it loud and clear. And I'm about to lose my voice again, and so, Terry, I think you're going to have to go for 15 minutes probably. But this is so vital, this sovereignty question that we were talking about there initially. If the states want to be, you know, if they want to exercise sovereignty, they've got to get that sovereignty, that power, that authority has to come from the people, we the people out here. It's not something that they can just legislate with executive orders coming out of the governor's office or wherever. We the people are the ones to have the sovereignty, the final say on the law. And of course, no one has said it here tonight. When you go to court and you have a conflict or a controversy with any department of government, any agency of government, whether it's a highway patrol, whether it's local taxing authorities or whoever it is, you want to use judicial notices to put the court, put the judge in particular, on notice of the fact that this is a controversy between one of the sovereigns and the servants. And you put the judge on notice that he is a beneficiary of the taxes and such that people are paying to keep government going. He is a beneficiary. He is a party to the action. If it is a controversy between a citizen as an individual or any agency of government, that judge and that prosecutor both have a conflict of interest. And this is one of the things that will empower juries if they recognize that there is this conflict of interest between the judge, the prosecutor, and the defendant in the case. And so conflicts of interest, Joe Sixpack out there on the street, he understands what conflicts of interest are. And, you know, go to Black's Law Dictionary and look up the term judicial notice and see what it says. You put the judge on judicial notice that you know that he has a conflict of interest, and that becomes a matter of record, and he has to tread very softly because if he doesn't, he can be sued. I have proved that in the past, that you can sue a judge, even a federal judge. And if they step out of line, if they are violating your constitutionally secured rights, they can be prosecuted. That's a federal crime under Title 18, 241, 242, for a judge or anybody else to violate your rights as enumerated in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. So, with that, I'll turn it back to you, Terry. We've had a very lively program. As I told you earlier in the week, I thought we should build on last week's program, and I think it has worked out quite well.
Elo, are you still with us? I think we lost her. Well, I tell you, Red, I appreciate so much your introducing me many, many, many months ago to Elo Jones. I just, that whole organization, it's just beyond me that people aren't even aware that it exists. I talk about it frequently, and I'm always surprising someone. They want to know how to get that information or you know, how to get in touch with them, or why haven't we heard of them? But I never, very seldom do I run into people other than in our little close circle of people that have listened to this show, or that have been involved in some of the patriot groups or Tea Party work or stuff like that that have been around me some. They just aren't aware, and we've got to get this message out. And I really urge everyone to do like Elo said, and that is to get some of these free brochures and take them with you. You never know when you're going to have an opportunity to teach someone. And I just really value especially how articulate Elo is, but she's so perfectly knowledgeable and so right on the money. And I mean, hardly, I have never heard her say anything that I can even take exception with, hardly. So, I mean, she is a treasure, and I value the fact that we have her available to us on a fairly regular basis here. And of course, I owe that to you, Red, so I graciously thank you. You know, I keep coming back to the fact, and so do you, Red. You go back to the scripture, back to Genesis, and talk about the subduing and dominion. But people need to understand that this is a spiritual battle. And I'm going to keep saying it until I get sick of hearing it myself, I guess. But when we go into this courtroom, we are face-to-face with the enemy. When we're dealing with these politicians, we're face-to-face with the enemy. When we look at the television set and listen to the news that comes out of that tube, we are face-to-face with the enemy. And that enemy has a common goal, and that goal is to diminish the deity of Christ. That goal is to worship the little g god of this earth, and for the humanness to become gods. They want to supplant God, just like the Pope is the vicar of Christ, to replace and substitute Christ. They all are criminally insane with the power. Elo said it really good a while ago about that they get so absorbed in the power of their position that they get addicted to that power. It's an adrenaline rush for them to think of themselves as being sovereigns, and in order to for them to be sovereign, they have to diminish the sovereignty of the individual. And when you get a grasp on the fact that that is a spiritual battle, then it changes the whole nature of things. It's just like on chat a while ago when Alan, who's a friend of mine, who's a fellow delegate for the Continental Congress, he was on there a while ago, and he was disputing the fact that there is a corporation known as the United States. And when we finally convinced them that, hey, this is a documented fact, we're not sitting here giving you an opinion, we're telling you what we know to be factual, and even Charles was going to send in the information to link him up on the dossier so he could see it for himself. But when he heard that, and he's a pretty passive guy. He's really against any kind of physical violence. I mean, he's totally wanting to find a peaceable solution. But his reaction to that was, if that's the case, we should forget about this show, and we should just go take up arms. Well, and then we said, well, you go ahead, lock and load, because that's what the case is. But the point is that his reaction was the same as we should be having. Not a violent reaction, but a peaceful, intense reaction to the fact that this is serious business that we're talking about. It's something we have to make a change on. It's something we have to educate the people to. We cannot let people walk around in ignorance any longer, because it's costing lives. I mean, it's literally costing hundreds and thousands of millions of lives over time around the world. These people want to kill off a bunch of people, and they are. They're doing it through abortion. They're doing it through vaccines. They're doing it through laboratory-created viruses. They're doing it by the poison they put in our food and our water. I mean, and they're doing it even with the laws. Even the health care bill is a means of population control.
It's a serious situation, and we cannot allow people just to shrug it off anymore. We've got to make the point clear, and we've got to get people educated to the point of understanding how serious it is and what's at risk. So we can't be afraid of taking – I'm getting a lot of background noise. We can't be afraid of taking a brochure from Fiji and carrying it with us and educating every cotton-picking person we come in contact with that's willing to listen. We've got to do it. So I've been on my soapbox long enough. How's your voice?
I thought you sounded pretty good.
We've got just a few minutes to go here, Red. Maybe we should close this in prayer.
I'm having trouble with my voice here, so, I'm so glad that somebody else is available, like Elo, to back up what I've been saying all these many, many years. And, of course, there are thousands of people out there as we speak who are trained and they're out handing out this literature. There's a gentleman in New York that has been arrested. He's been violated. He's been abused, but he won't quit. He is out there educating people. And, of course, I've been through a little bit of that harassment myself, and I know what it is. You are going to be harassed, I'm sure, at times. But a lot of times you'll find that you will get a good reception from people who are really trying to find some answers to our problems in this country. And, of course, I'm always glad to hear you reiterate the fact that we're in a spiritual war. It's not a political war. We're in a spiritual war. The very forces of hell are very, very much in evidence in our government. And that's how we get these decisions, the Roe v. Wade decision for one, and a lot of the others, taking the prayer out of the public schools in 1947, taking the Bible out of the government schools in 1963. These are the forces of hell that are doing these things, and we had better recognize them. We had better understand who they are and what they're trying to do, and recognize that we cannot stand by. We have to subdue. We have to take dominion. And so I've really enjoyed these last 2 weeks now, the programming, and it's just right up my alley. It's what I like to hear. And so I'll turn this back to you, Terry.
Well, we're right up against the end of the show, and I'm just going to say good night to everyone and let you rest your voice. And may God bless all of our listeners. And I'm praying that a miracle happens here coming this election, that maybe, just maybe, there can be a difference made. I know that it's not going to make a significant difference, but I'll take whatever we can get at this point that the people will actually see through some of this deception, just like we've got going on here in Colorado, and that well, good night, everybody. We'll see you next week. Walls in our minds. Good night, Red.
When I look into your holiness, when I gaze into your loveliness, when all things that surround become shadows in the light, when I found the joy of reaching your heart, Love.